Yek e yagi, good day. Chata ya yeshdlak you chatu asak. My name is Mia Wiederspoon, and today we are going to read from Tlingit Yu Chatungi, Beginning Tlingit Workbook, by Khune, Dr. Lance Twitchell. Based on Beginning Tlingit by Nora Marks Dauenhauer and Richard Dauenhauer. Cha Tlingit Ch Satiye, our Tlingit identity. Tlingit clans are divided into two halves, which are often called moieties. These two sides are Tlake Shungukedi, Wolf Eagle, and Tlake Tlayanedi, Raven Crow. Within each moiety, there are many clans. The clan identity is inherited through Cha Tla Yananach, our mother's side. These clans use images and connecting narratives as crests, which are often in the form of an animal, mountain, constellation, or supernatural creature. These images are attached to sacred stories that document why a clan uses particular crests. Crests, names, stories, houses, objects, and land are all at U, which literally translates as a purchased thing, but within Tlingit culture means a sacred clan-owned thing. At-u is an important term in Cha Kustiye, our way of life. Knowledge of at-u helps solidify the understanding of a place and belonging, communal ownership and responsibility, and the respect needed to feel the connection between Cha at-u ku, our sacred possessions, and Cha Shagun, our ancestors or heritage. If something is considered at-u of another clan, remember not to use it or talk publicly about it without the clan's permission. Today I'm with my classmates, and I will ask them, Guk Sayayati, where are you from?
Kach Chanach Yechut Yati, Wushteen Yuchut Dusak. I said that I am from Wrangell, and my name is Wushteen.
Guk Sayayati, where are you from?
Shtakin Kwank Yechut Yati, I'm from Wrangell. Kanata Yuchut Dusak, my name is Della.
Guk Sayayati, where are you from?
Arkansas, Yechat Yati, Jerky Ayachat, Kayek Yuchat Dosako. I'm from Arkansas, I'm Cherokee, and my name is Noah Stewart.
Guk Sayayati, where are you from?
Klanum K Yechat Yati, Powhatan Ayachat, Yiska Yuchat Duasak. I am from Klanum County. I am Powhatan, and my name is Zeke Young.
Gunash Cheesh to the high school Tlingit class, Ryan Rooney, Della Churchill, Noah Stewart, and Zeke Young.
Gunnel Chish, Ltakat Yuhan, Chateya Huantlain Yuchat Duasak, Tlingit language teacher, Wrangell High School. Ya ye dat today, we're going to talk about the Gonakadet, a legendary sea monster amongst the Tlingit people. The Gonakadet is a legendary monster of early Tlingit lore. Very few people have ever seen the Gonakadet. There are stories told about it by those who claim to have seen it, and it differs widely. All agree, however, that the monster lives in water and is harmless. Indeed, under certain circumstances, it brings good luck to those who are fortunate enough to see it. It seems always to be covered with coarse black or brownish hair, like the whiskers of a sea lion. When a person sees a Gonakadet, he must leap upon its back and pull out some of its coarse hair in order to have the good luck follow. The legend of the Gonakadet began a long time ago. In certain times, a high caste man married and went to live in the village of his wife and her people. His father-in-law was the chief. The chief's wife despised the son-in-law very much. She believed him to be a lazy fellow who did nothing all day long but gamble, which was a favorite pastime of the Tlingit people. He always left the house early in the morning and returned late at night, and she assumed he must be spending his time gambling. The mother-in-law often showed her contempt for him by ordering the slaves to leave no food out for him and to let the fire go out. The wife was sorry her mother felt this way, but she knew it was useless to object. When the summer came, the people went fishing for salmon, as was the custom. The son-in-law dried some fish too, but instead of packing them away in boxes for winter use, he took them up into the woods beside a little lake. Here he built himself a hut of dry wood. He had heard of a monster that lived in the lake, and his plan was to capture it. With his little stone axe as his only tool, he cut a large red cedar tree that grew on the edge of the lake, felling it into the water. Then he prepared wedges of hard wood and split the tree lengthwise down the middle, leaving the ends intact. Next, he took a cross piece and spread apart the two halves of the line for bait and dropped it into the water between the two sections of his trap. The first time the monster took the bait, the line broke, so he made a stronger line. The second time, by pulling very rapidly, he was able to bring the creature to the surface of the water right between the two halves of the red cedar tree. Then he knocked the cross piece out, and the head of the monster was caught tightly as the section of the tree snapped together. He sprang ashore at once and stood watching the creature struggle to free itself. It was so strong that it dragged the great tree under the water, but it could not get away, and at last its struggles ceased. The man pried apart the trap and dragged the monster ashore to examine it. Two black flukes grew along its back. It had a mouthful of long, sharp teeth, and its claws seemed to be sheathed in copper. The man stripped the skin from the creature, preserving the copper claws, and dressed it carefully. When it was completely tanned, he climbed inside of the skin and stepped into the lake. The skin at once began to swim of its own power and took him down to the monster's beautiful home under the water. When his adventures were over, the man hid the skin in a hollow tree near the lake and went home. He told no one, not even his wife, of his magical, powerful discovery. The following spring, the supply of food in the village was exhausted before the new salmon run began. There was hunger among the houses. Then the man remembered his adventure with this monster and said to his wife, "I'm going away. I will return here by morning, just before the raven caws. If you should hear a raven call before I get back, you will know that something has happened to me and that I shall never return." He went back to the shore of the little lake, put the monster's skin on, and swam away through the lake's entrance down to the sea. Here he captured a king salmon. He returned to the lake and hid the magic skin again in the hollow tree. The salmon he left on the beach not far from his mother-in-law's house and then slipped into his own home before the call of the raven sound from the mountain. His mother-in-law awoke early that morning, and upon going outside, came upon a king salmon. It was a fine, large fish, and she exclaimed with joy. She thought it must have been drifting here. She took the fish into her house, and she did not tell anybody where she found it. Then she made a fire and invited all the people there to enjoy the food. The next night, the man revealed to his wife the story of his adventure with the monster, and how he had used the skin to capture the king salmon. He planned to go again and ordered her to keep the whole story secret. This time, he brought back two salmon and laid them on the beach, as before, in front of his mother-in-law's house. She found them and took them into her house without revealing how she got them. When she found salmon on the beach a third time, the mother-in-law realized that a mysterious power was at work in some way She did not understand how it happened, but she could see no reason why she couldn't claim the credit. She became puffed up with pride and in turn more unkind than ever to her son-in-law, even shaming him before her neighbors. The man and wife, knowing the real story, just laughed about it to themselves. Every day the young man brought in some kind of new food, halibut, even seal, thinking the time was now ripe. The mother-in-law pretended to have a dream, and in accordance with a new revelation, she asked her husband, the chief, to send word to the villagers that it would be bad luck for anyone to rise early. She did this so that no one might chance to find the food upon the beach before she did. In the middle of the night, she pretended that a spirit had come to her and had taken possession of her body. She said to her husband, "Have a mask made for me. It is to be called Food Finding Spirit. Let them make me a hat with copper claws." The chief was proud that his wife had become a shaman and did all that she asked, even making her a shaman's apron with puffin beaks for a fringe. So she went around the village, shaking her rattle like a shaman and prophesizing what kind of food she would bring the next day. Her son-in-law listened to her loud words and smiled to himself. Sure enough, the next morning the people would find her spirits had told the truth. The whole village thought she was a wonderful shaman. They were so happy that she was saving them from famine, and they spread the word abroad. All high caste people learned what a wonderful shaman this village possessed. Each night before the man went on to don the monster skin, he would remind his wife, "Always listen for the raven. If you hear it before I come home, you must rise immediately." In the morning, the pretended shaman found a sea lion. She was proud indeed. But the greatest day of all was when the whale appeared. The man had a hard time swimming ashore with the whale and dragging it upon the beach. But the people rejoiced greatly, filling many boxes of oil from the whale blubber. They hastened to invite the neighboring village to share in their feast. This sort of thing went on for some time, the mother-in-law growing more unkind and spiteful towards her son-in-law as her fame increased, always keeping up the pretense of being a shaman. The young man did not plan to bring in any more whales because of the hard time he had with the first one. But one night, when he saw two whales, he couldn't resist the temptation to capture them. He seized one of them in a forearm and started to swim ashore. It was hard work, but he struggled on all night up from the sea to the shore of the lake. When he saw it was beginning to grow light, he thought he had to better abandon his prize, but he found that his copper claws were embedded into the whale's flesh and that he could not let them go. Sweat was pouring from his face inside the monster's skin. When at last he saw the beach before his home, it was too late. The raven cawed from the mountain, and the monster instantly froze to death. In the house, the wife heard the cry of the raven. Her husband had not returned. She recalled his words and began dressing herself in her best marten skin robe, weeping all the time. The mother-in-law went out to the beach as usual and discovered the two whales with the monster between them. She instantly called the people to come and see her spirit, or her yake, as a Tlingit call the spirit. They looked at the monster in awe. It had two flukes on its back, straight, coarse, blackish hair, with a very long tail, and it was nothing like they'd ever seen before. When the young man's wife saw that all the people were out on the beach milling around in their excitement, she came out from her house. There were long steps leading down to the front, as all the high-caste houses were built in those days. She started down these steps, crying very loudly, in the manner of a wife mourning for her husband. The villagers stared at her in astonishment, muttering to themselves, "Why does that high-caste girl call this monster her husband?" The wife approached her mother, who was still standing beside the whales. People climbed on the roof of the nearby houses to watch. The wife spoke, "Mother, is this dead monster your food-finding spirit?" You know that you have been lying. How is it that your yake should die? You know that spirits do not die, but that they live on forever. You are the one to blame because my husband lies dead there in between two whales. Then the wife went down to the monster and said, some of you people who are very clean, come and help me. When the people looked, they found that her husband had died with his hands in the very act of opening the creature's jaws so that he might crawl out. From that day, the monster has been called Gonakadate, meaning something mysterious. So, too, do the Tlingit realize that there is some mysterious connection between the cry of the raven high in the mountains early in the morning and the creature they call Gonakadate. Up in the forest, the villagers found the little hut with the trap and the wedge beside the lake, just as the wife described to them. So they knew that her story was true. The mother-in-law was so ashamed over the discovery of her masquerade as a shaman that she hid herself inside her house and later on was found there laying dead with blood pouring from her mouth. Every evening the daughter went to the tree where her husband had kept his monster skin to weep and mourn for him. One day she saw two black dorsal fins break from the water and heard the voice of her husband. I have come for you. Get on my back and hold tight. He carried her down to the monster's beautiful home under the lake, and they and their children live forever, bringing good luck to all who see them. Their daughters live at the head of the streams and are called daughters of the creek. They are the ones who keep our streams continually flowing with water. Thank you for listening to me. This was the legendary monster of the Tlingit, the Gonakadate.
Gunas Chish for listening to my podcast. The first thing we addressed was our Tlingit identity. And then I asked, where are you from? And lastly, Virginia told the Gonakadate story. Dziogansa, see you later.